Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today our guest is Brandon Gustafson, and he is a seasoned professional in assisted living investing with a master's degree in healthcare administration from the University of Utah and over a decade of experience in the healthcare industry. And since 2020, he has owned and operated two remote assisted living facilities and has secured over $1.5 million in SBA funding along the way. So Brandon, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks, Eileen. I appreciate it.
So Brandon, can you give us a little bit more of an insight into your background and how you got started with real estate?
Yeah. So I, like you mentioned, I've been in healthcare now for over a decade, have a master's in healthcare administration, and I got into healthcare because I really enjoyed helping people. It was something that I had always wanted to do. But when I was in high school, I did an internship at a physical therapist's office, and I decided then I didn't want to be a clinician. And as I started going down the path of deciding I wanted to be in healthcare, I found that, you know, there's a whole business side to healthcare that I could get involved with and still have an impact on people's lives. And so that's how I got started into healthcare. As I started getting interested in real estate, though, I have probably a similar story to many people. My daughter was sick one day. It was actually June 9th, 2019. I remember the exact date. She was sick. It was a Sunday, and I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in one day, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I gotta figure this out." And so I went to a Rich Dad Poor Dad event, and had to end up leaving a little bit early. And I also saw that the sales thing was coming, so just left a little bit early to avoid any awkward things because I wasn't gonna buy anything. And ultimately, started doing some research and trying to see how could I blend this passion and experience that I have in healthcare with real estate. And that's where I found assisted living. At the time, it was all over a bunch of podcasts and things like that, but I had no idea what to do with real estate. And I joined a real estate group here local to me. I paid a lot of money for that education, which was good and bad. Learned a lot, and I started formulating this plan in my mind. I'm going to do some fix and flips, get some money, get some cash coming in, so I can have enough to purchase an assisted living facility or convert a home into an assisted living facility. And started diving into that, and had a conversation with a mentor of mine at that point, and he's like, "You should just do assisted living. It's obviously the thing that you want to do." And it just clicked in my brain. You're right. That's exactly what I want to do. So I went and started thinking, my whole mindset shifted from how am I going to do this right now and get the money, to who am I going to partner with and bring in to help me achieve this goal of starting an assisted living facility. I went and partnered, I had a conversation with my dad and my parents who had money through a HELOC. We used that then as a down payment and did an SBA loan to purchase our first facility. We closed on that in September of 2020. And then because I was bored during COVID, so that's what I did with my time. And then as you're getting close to closing, those that have done deals before know that there's like this lull period where you're just like kind of waiting, and then the storm hits. I was in that kind of lull period before the storm hit. That was my first one, so I didn't know what to expect. So I started looking for another one and went under contract and closed on that second one in February of 21. So purchased the two facilities and just kind of a whirlwind of let's figure it out and get things going.
It's really interesting. So how did you take the steps? So when you made that decision, you wanted to combine healthcare and real estate together and then had that conversation with your mentor and then decided that assisted living was the path that you wanted to go down. How did you go about researching and finding that first property and then looking at the property itself and envisioning, you know, the business model and implementing the assisted living business side of it as well?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so I had been listening to a bunch of podcasts. I had listened, Bigger Pockets had a few people on there. Joel Fairless had some on his. Whitney Sewell had some on his. So I'm listening to these people, and they're talking about assisted living, and I started looking into it a little bit. And there wasn't a lot of content out there at the time. There were some old books that I found on Amazon that kind of gave you some direction. There's another guy, his name is Serge Lupescu, who I reached out to and have built a relationship with since that time. But he had just started and was doing this YouTube thing, so I was like watching all of his stuff and trying to figure that out. There's another guy, Gene Guarino, who has since passed away, but he had a ton of stuff out there. So I was getting out, trying to network and trying to figure this stuff out, but there wasn't a ton of education around it, a ton of information. And so I figured I've got the experience in healthcare. I'm going to leverage that and just kind of use that information to help me get to where I would like to go with this. And my initial thought was I'm going to do a conversion on a house. And so I started looking and realized I'm going to have to talk to city zoning and planning and try to figure out, do I need to zone this a different way to get it to work? So I started talking to municipalities. It was just a jumble of a bunch of things. I ended up having a conversation with a broker who was in Colorado and kind of laid out this plan. I was just in information gathering phase and laid out my plan for I'm going to find this house, I'm going to convert it and trying to do things. And he's like, you should just buy an existing facility. I think he was trying to say, hey, I've got something for you. But anyways, we had a really good conversation. And that was another thing that just clicked in my brain. Yeah, I should probably just look for something that's already existing, buy an existing business. I don't have to do the conversion or anything like that. So that's what we did. We purchased the real estate with the business, which allowed us to do SBA, which was really nice, and leverage that. And already had something was operating and had people in there. And then it was just kind of talking with people at the health department and again, kind of leveraging a little bit of that knowledge that I had from my career and from education to help us get to that point where we felt comfortable, had an operating facility, had gotten all the licensing and everything in place, and done what we needed to do to really move things along.
So the first deal that you did, was that the first property that the broker brought to you of purchasing an existing facility?
No, it wasn't. So the process I went through, I mentioned I started looking and even when got with a realtor, started looking at houses, started calling municipalities, figuring out zoning, had the conversation with him, and he said, go and buy something existing. So I started getting on LoopNet and BizBuySell, and you can actually on one of those, you can filter all the way down to assisted living, which is really cool. So I did that, and I remember there was a day I went to the chiropractor. And I got there like 15 minutes early and I was looking on LoopNet and there was one local to me in Salt Lake. And I was like, I'm just gonna call him and figure this out, see what he says. And so I clicked over there, reached out to the broker, to the listing agent, and he's like, yeah, we can send you the information. We just need to sign an NDA. And I had no idea what an NDA was. It's a non-disclosure agreement. And so I emailed my attorney really quick, hey, can I sign this? Am I like giving my life away if I do this? And he's like, no, it's super standard. So we got that one, looked at it, and then I started building out an underwriting. I think there's a lot of similarities between assisted living and multifamily, at least from an underwriting perspective. And so I found somebody that had a multifamily underwriting calculator, converted that over to be very specific to assisted living, and underwrote the deal and found out it wasn't a great fit. And at that point, I was just kind of feeling stuck. And so I went back to another mentor I had through that real estate group that I had paid a lot of money to be a part of, and just went back to him and said, hey, I would like, I'm stuck here. I need some help trying to figure this out. And he said, there's somebody in our network, here with the group, and they're in Denver, and they are actually purchasing a facility right now. Let me connect you to, and maybe he can give you some guidance there. So I had the conversation with that guy, and they were purchasing a facility from somebody that actually had a second home in Colorado Springs. So they're buying in Denver, second facility in Colorado Springs. He introduced me to his broker, and then from there, that's the broker that we started working with because I really enjoyed working with him. He helped us get under contract with that one in Colorado Springs, helped us do some of the underwriting to make sure that, you know, I was new to this and make sure I was had a good understanding of what we're getting into. And then beyond that, we just started having conversations to make sure the licensing and everything was in place. So that's kind of the track record of, or I guess the way that we got to that eventual broker who helped us find the property. It was a lot of just trial and error and trying to figure out the right person at the right time to really help us make things work.
So then when you found this property and you recognized that you wanted to purchase it and move forward with a contract, how did you then take this deal and then present it to your family and then partner together on that front?
Yeah, I actually presented the idea before the deal. So I was like, hey, this is what I want to do. If I find a good deal, or are you open to it? And I took my dad to lunch. We sat there for a couple hours, and it wasn't out of the blue. He and I had been chatting about it for a while up to that point. So it wasn't something that just like came out of the blue. Hey, I found this deal. It was a continual conversation. And when we found that one, the first thing that we did is I went and underwrote it and felt pretty confident in the numbers at that point. So we went under contract, and then we drove out to Colorado Springs, which Salt Lake to Colorado Springs, we did it in one day with little kids in the car. It was like a 12-hour drive. And my wife was like, we're never doing that in one day again. So, but we went out there and looked at it and just kind of started getting a feel for it and getting excited about it. And we're comfortable with the numbers. So that's how I had presented it to him. It was, he actually had joined that real estate group with me initially. He was aware of my interest in getting into assisted living. I was pretty transparent on that from the very beginning, before we even joined that real estate group. So we had those conversations, and it just kind of led to finding the right opportunity for us that worked out for us.
Would you mind if I ask, what was the size of the facility that you purchased?
Yeah, so the two that I own are actually both licensed for 16 beds. So they're residential homes. They're in neighborhoods. They're single family homes. The one in Colorado that we have, which is the first one we bought, is, 4,500 square feet. It's a big home, but it's also built in the 1890s and is four stories tall. It's a really cool property, but just kind of unique. And then the other one is smaller, I would say 3,500 square feet, but it was built purposefully to be an assisted living facility in the early 2000s. And then we just bought it 20 years after it was built. And it works really well. It's in an HOA, just kind of looks like every other house that was built in the early 2000s, brick and stucco. And yeah, it just kind of looks the same.
So when you took over this property, what were some of the things that you had to establish, you know, from the administrative front in terms of like getting a license, medical professionals and things like that, that was involved with this?
Oh, that's a great question. So when you start, when you're buying somebody else's facility, it's very similar to starting your own facility. The licensing process, the application is going to look very similar. You just check a different box and answer a few different questions. When you buy somebody's facility, you do what's called a change of ownership process. So you fill out all the information, including who your administrator is going to be at the facility, what population you want to serve, and some of those kind of demographic and pieces of information. You're going to put all that together and then submit it. And in a nutshell, how you get the license. There's a lot more complexities to it, but that's like in a nutshell how you get there. The other piece of that is getting the people in place. So when you're running this business, you have to have a facility administrator. And I talk to people that do that themselves. They're an owner, operator, administrator. They wear all of the hats. I don't do that. I operate out of state. I have people that operate the facilities for me. And they handle all the hiring, they handle bringing in all the residents, all of the things, the regulations with the state. They do the majority of the stuff for me, which is excellent. And then I help out with some of the higher level things that go on and interfacing with the state and making sure that our license state is in compliance and doing a little bit of the billing and some of those things. That administrator has to be somebody that is licensed with the state. They go through a licensing process that requires some combination of education and work experience and a test. Each state is going to be slightly different for what their requirements are. But once you get that person in place, they're able to kind of run the business and make sure things are going well. And the type of homes that we run that are these smaller types of homes with an assisted living kind of brand, the level of care that we provide is often, depending on the state, I know in Wyoming, it's different. You have to have a CNA. But in Idaho and Colorado, where I'm at, we have a caregiver, which is a lower level. They don't have to have really any certification. We'll get them certified to pass medications, but that's a $50 test that they have to do. It's really simple to get to a point where they can pass medications. So it's a very kind of low barrier to bring in staff, which is pros and cons. You can find a lot of people that want to do it. Also, it's very high turnover because there's not a lot of skills or certifications involved. But you get those people in there. You partner with a nurse in these small types of homes, an RN, who could come in and do resident assessments. They're making sure the residents have everything they need, working with case managers to make sure that the level of care is appropriate. And they just kind of run it that way. Like there's staffing is the most difficult part of running an assisted living facility. There's a lot of headaches that go into it. But at its core, it's a fairly simple process and not a lot of extra certifications or anything like that that you'd have to be aware of or adhere to.
Is there a patient to caregiver ratio that you need to maintain?
Yeah. So I actually just did a video on that on my YouTube channel probably a month ago now. But it depends on the state. So it just kind of depends on what the rules are in the state. And in Idaho, for example, it's a 1-15 ratio for the level of care that we provide. And then in Colorado, it's like 1-8 during the day, and then 1-10 1-10 at night, 1-8 during the day. And different states have different rules. The best way to figure that out is like to talk to the health department, talk to the licensing body and say, you know, what is that resident to caregiver ratio? And they're going to be able to give you the guidance. You can probably find it online as well. It's just like finding the exact verbiage and in the exact document that they have, it's difficult. So reaching out and finding out that information is the best way to do it. But there's a requirement you've got to meet that helps dictate how many staff you have to have. It just kind of depends on the state.
And how often does the state come in for inspections or anything like that in order to maintain the compliance, that factor that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah. So they will, when you first start out, they will typically do something. They were really slow during COVID. I think they're catching up. It's generally going to be in the first 6 months. They're going to do this initial inspection survey to make sure everything is up and running and you're meeting all the requirements that you need to do. Beyond that, typically they're going to come in once a year, once every other year is what you need to do, but they don't announce it. They just show up at your doorstep one day and do an inspection. And that's like with the state and the regulations. We also will have separate inspections that are like for fire safety or things like that, that people will just come in and do random surveys on us for those reasons. So you have to always be ready. You have to have all of your documentation always ready to go. Be prepared for something. Make sure your staff know what to do when somebody from the state is coming to do a survey. Because you never know when it's going to happen. Typically, though, once every year is what you would expect to have with those types of surveys.
What would you say after getting into this business is the biggest expense that you didn't expect going into the an assisted living?
The biggest expense that I didn't expect. I don't know that there was anything that I didn't expect going into it. There's really four, I feel like there's a fifth one, but there's four big main expenses that you have to be aware of that take up like 80% of your expense budget. Your staffing, your insurance, the food for the residents, and the, I'm blanking on what it is now. you got to do taxes and there's something else there. But at its core, like those four or five things are going to take up 80% of your budget. Most of that is the debt service is the other one, obviously. So those are your big ones. And you know, if you've got a good feel for what your staffing model is going to look like, you have a good number for what you're going to be paying to feed your residents in the home, and you can work and get good insurance rates, and then you work with a lender to get that service. You know, those core things are what you need to be aware of as you get started, and see if you can get better deals on it, negotiating and things like that.
So Brandon, what's next for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are actually in the process of selling one of our facilities, the one in Colorado, and we're going to be shifting our focus up into Idaho. We really love that market. It's closer to us. It's a little bit easier for us to operate in, but the proximity is better for us there. And so we plan on expanding our portfolio there. We're in the Treasure Valley area, which is Boise. We really like that area. We'll probably do that. We might go over to the other side of the state, but that's really where we want to focus our efforts on right now, and adding 3 to 10 facilities to the portfolio here in the next 12 to 18 months is our hope. Once we get this other one sold off and can really start focusing on that.
And Brandon, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
Oh, it's been enlightening. It's been a lot of fun to just kind of learn the process. I really enjoy I enjoy the relationships that you build when you're doing things. I love finding deals and underwriting deals. I work a full-time job and I do analytics. And so I love working with numbers, working in Excel and those types of things. It's one of the things that I enjoy most. And so I love starting the process of finding a deal. It's super rewarding for me and energizing for me to go and do that. I love doing it. I love the advantages that you get from a tax perspective with real estate and just some of the complexities that you get to deal with, especially in assisted living. Just seeing how businesses run and operate and understanding just all kinds of things, real estate, business, healthcare, just all the things that are in the pot there. It's exciting for me to be involved in all of that.
And if there's one thing you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started, what would that be?
That's a good question. I would say, I knew that location was important, and I think I've realized that a little bit more. So part of the reason why we're selling the Colorado facility is it was our first one. And I was just like, I'm going to figure this out. I want to do this. And this is like a great opportunity. And it is a good opportunity, but it didn't fit all of the criteria that we had. And so there's location from a perspective of like the consumer and things like that. But there's a location perspective for you as the person that's buying and investing in that real estate. And I took a lot more time the second time around to figure out a bunch of the details that fit our criteria, both from an investment standpoint, but also like where we wanted this, where assisted living is going to grow, where we felt like it was going in a good spot. And when we found the Boise market that is relatively close to where we're at in Salt Lake City, it just felt like a really good opportunity. And all of the underwriting and all the research that I did has played into that as well, that it was a good decision for us to go to that market. And that's why we're going to lean into that. So location is really important, and taking time to figure out the right location for you is super important as well.
And what is the one thing that sets successful people apart in real estate investing?
I would say persistence, and just continuing to do things and work through the issues that come up. Something I tell people this all the time when I do my coaching is, you're going to, specifically with lending, because it's the best example I can give, you're going to want to get the money that you need to buy this facility. And you're going to reach out to lenders, and you're going to reach out to 100 of them, and 90 of them are going to say, no, there's no way you can do that deal. And 10 of them are going to say, yeah, let's have a conversation. And those 10, one or two are going to say yes. And you just have to be persistent in what you're doing and consistent. I say this at the end of all my YouTube videos. If you keep going step by step by step, and you're consistent and persistent, you're going to be successful. You just have to keep going. And when you do that, you're going to be fine.
So Brandon, where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I am online. My website's assistedlivinginvesting.net. I have an underwriting calculator that I was talking about a little bit earlier. I give that away for free. So if you're interested in getting that, you can go there. I'm on YouTube under Assisted Living Investing, or you can search my name and I'll pop up there. We also have a Facebook group that I put out regular content on there and try to be really engaging with the group there to help people out. And then for your listeners, I created a special link. There's assistedlivinginvesting.net/Bonavest. So if you go there, I've got an extra webinar and a few other extra goodies that people can get access to.
Fantastic. Brandon, thank you so much for all of your time today.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.